Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey guys, it's Grant Paulson. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast. We're changing things up. We're going to be making the show available for you 1 hour at a time. So if you're looking for a specific part of the hour of a show, look below at the description of what we've been talking about for time cues.
It's Danny. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you live on the radio from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. weekdays on 106.7 The Fan.
Time to go blitzing around the Beltway. 12:18. We're going to get into some of the numbers. The Redskins' ratings so bad this past weekend that two games outdid them in the market, and they were worse than some of the Redskins' recent preseason game ratings. Why? How did they get here? What does this mean? We'll delve into that. But first, on the Blitz, we're going to cover the Caps, the Wiz, and the aforementioned Redskins, so let's get it popping. Michael Phillips of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Michael, three games remaining. Who do you think is on a warm seat here? Who's going to be evaluated closely? Who do these games matter the most for?
Well, I'd say the evaluation's all but over for Ben Kotwicka, the special teams coach. I think if you're looking for a scapegoat, you could do a lot worse than that position. He's been around for a few years. It's a tough job to hold being the special teams coach in Washington, D.C. You're not getting a deep roster. You're not getting a team that particularly cares about that unit. You're not getting a punt returner who's dedicated to being a punt returner. So, from that perspective, it's wildly unfair. But at the same time, that's seen as kind of an expendable position, if you will.
Yeah, we'll never touch Danny Smith's record of numbers approximate 17 kicks blocked that one season. But so I like that part better, I suppose. Miguel, this week for Cousins, I don't know what I expect because I don't trust the weapons. No Jordan Reed. There's not much good around him. But it hadn't looked like it did against the Chargers here very often this season. He would probably tell you the same thing, that he's got to be better down the stretch. What do you expect from him, not only this week, but over the last three?
Yeah, and an important game for him to show his growth as a quarterback, too. When you look back at that last game in Arizona that he played, it just didn't go well for him at all. The Cardinals kind of had a great game plan for him. I thought really tricked him into some bad throws when they were in Arizona last time around. That was kind of a defining game of the season. There were some big struggles there, not to suggest that Kirk Cousins was the only reason they lost that game. But this is a defense that has historically played him very tough. Bruce Arians, a guy who knows quarterbacks, knows what it takes to get to quarterbacks. I would expect a very poised Cardinals defense. I understand they're not the best team in the league, but this is a team that's very well prepared week in and week out. Nobody's still doing an evaluation process. That's just a silly thing people say. Everybody's made up their mind already. But I still think it'll be fascinating to see, as we watch Kirk Cousins' growth and continue to over the next few years. Can he adjust to what that defense threw at him last time and then maybe be a little bit better prepared this time around?
If the Redskins have decided they're not going to re-sign Bashaud Breeland because they can't spend that much at corner where they already have Norman's huge cap number, why wouldn't they just start playing Fabian Moreau a bunch to see what they've gotten him?
Yeah, I'd like to see a lot of Fabian Moreau. Obviously, playing Quentin Dunbar has its upsides as well. He's a guy who probably wouldn't command anything big on the open market if he were to hit there even a year from now. So a guy you can keep in the system. I think it's reasonable to say, hey, let's see what we can build around Quentin Dunbar. And, obviously Fabian Moreau's a big piece of the future, so is Kendall Fuller. So I think you'll certainly see that corner turn starting this week towards a lot of these guys. It's going to be the folks who watch preseason games. Heard you talk about the ratings. The folks who watch preseason games, those are probably the folks who are going to watch this one. I can tell you down here in the Richmond market, Redskins finished fourth last weekend. They finished behind every other televised NFL game on Sunday. I would expect more of that going forward.
Yikes. Ryan Anderson, speak to me about him. I was bullish. I was excited. I am less excited now that I've seen what I've seen. Give me kind of your status update on him.
Yeah, I think people were expecting big things from him, and reasonably so. He came in with a big resume and certainly had a very nice training camp, made some splash plays. I think Junior Gallette's another real head scratcher there. And I know he's been on his little Twitter crusade for more time or whatever it is he's looking for, more snaps. That's a position that just didn't deliver to the extent that they needed it to. That depth didn't come through this year. You were hoping Ryan Anderson could make some nice plays there, get some pressure on the quarterback, hoping the same from Gallette. And, you know, I think Preston Smith had a really nice first few games. It's kind of tailed off since then. To me, the defensive line's the story. I think when that interior defensive line, Jonathan Allen was cranking, when those guys were playing their best football early in the year, it opened up a lot of plays for everybody else. And now that the interior line is not playing its best football of the year and is really ravaged by injury, I think you're seeing the effects of it on those outside linebackers, on the pass rush. And Ryan Kerrigan just gets held on every play. It's apparently a thing referees are fine with. I am not sure how opponents get away with that, but that is something to watch every week.
Thanks, Michael. Appreciate you, buddy.
See you, bud.
Yes, sir.
Let's talk some hoops. Nick Ashew. You hear him here on 106.7 The Fan. Nicholas, stop me if I'm wrong, but I just don't think the Wizards are very good right now. Part of that is John Wall's not playing, but they got bigger issues than that also.
Yeah, I mean, the mind-blowing thing to me is the Wizards lost for the seventh time this season to a sub-500 opponent. They're 9-6 against teams that have records of 500 or better. I don't really understand why this team continues to play down to the level of their opponents. I mean, the Nets had half of their actual roster and guys that you maybe would recognize their name not playing. It is mind-blowing to me. I mean, John Wall certainly makes a big difference, but I mean, we saw some trends early with this team, and it was one of the things that I was really frustrated with them was, you know, at times they would not only play to the level of their opponent, but they would let certain situations get in their head where they would, you know, have a big lead against Phoenix and then blow that thinking then that game was locked up, or they'd let the whole Lonzo LeVar Ball thing get in their head and get locked, and then they would end up blowing that game. I mean, there's just a lot of things right now with them where it's hard to understand why this team is playing the way that it is.
I could see why Markieff Morris has been a persona non grata in some organizations. I understand that you try to give some leeway for the injury, for him coming back. Just looks like he doesn't care right now, to be honest with you, Nick. And it's infuriating to watch them be better with Mike Scott, who was all but out of basketball, to be better with small lineups where they're struggling to rebound. He just looks like he's not interested, really, in playing hard or taking over, especially in a time where you don't have one of the brightest stars in the league. That step-up time, he seems to be doing the exact opposite and just getting his couple minutes a night in so that he can go sit down.
Yeah, I mean, Morris only played 19 minutes against the Nets and really wasn't much of a factor, like you said. And, like, I find it hard to believe that John Wall is the guy that helps pick up everybody's attitude on this team, that, like, with Wall missing, that everybody suddenly just is a totally different player and their attitude's totally different. But, I mean, look, this team is better with John Wall. There's no question. But, yeah, Morris is a real – it's a struggle. It's a question mark for me. I'd like to see more of Jason Smith. I wanted to see more of – Jason Smith, before really we got to this point in the season even, I mean, he's been working hard to become more of a stretch four, stretch five. He's a guy that is an attitude guy. He's somebody that is a hard worker. He looked a little rusty at times, against the Nets. But, yeah, Mike Scott is a nice addition, a guy off the bench for them. But I think Smith deserves more time. And if Markieff Morris is uninterested, then that's fine. Then put somebody else out there that wants to play, because this team right now at 14-13 – is in a position right now where this thing could get away from them very quickly if they continue to go down this road of losing to teams like the Nets.
Nick, thank you, buddy. Good catching up.
All right, guys. Let's
talk some puck. Tom Daly is the co-host of Crashing the Net with Neil Greenberg. You can hear it tonight on 106.7 The Fan, an all caps, all hockey show. What time's Crashing the Net on tonight?
6:30 tonight, following CDVTW right here on The Fan.
You guys will have a lot to talk about. The Capitals have won 9 of 12, 5 goals, 5 different goal scorers last night. They pounded the Avalanche. I really like the way they played.
Yeah, last night was a fun game to watch. Not many that we've been able to see this year that have been as fun to see a dominating performance from the Capitals. But this is a thing that you need to see from a team that you want to see go deep into the playoffs, is they need to beat up on teams that they can beat up on. And there were a lot of goals that I really enjoyed seeing. Matt Niskanen, Brett Connolly, Jacob Vrana, even John Carlson getting his third of the year. Everyone that needed to get involved ended up getting involved and really laid it on in a big win.
Couple things quickly. One, what a handsome Beltway Blitz we booked today. Nick Hansen was just on.
Tommy here,
Michael Phillips, Richmond Times-Dispatch, part-time male model, mostly an editor of the Richmond Times-Dispatch.
Yeah.
The handsomest blitz there ever was. Second, Jacob Vrana. You know I'm a Vrana guy, but I'm a Rube.
Yeah.
You know, you've forgotten more this morning than I will ever know about the Ookie. I thought that shot last night, I go, yes, just how do I get more? How do I get more Jacob Vrana? I don't know about top six, Thombie, but where does he slot in? What's his future? What's his ceiling? I like what I see from the kid.
There aren't a lot of things that are locked in right now with the Capitals lineup, especially with TJ Oshie being out. But one thing I would say if I was Barry Trotz is that that left side on the second line for Jacob Vrana is his until he says otherwise. And the reason why is because Andre Burakovsky is coming off of an injury. Right now, he's been reunited with that third line that was so successful last year with Eller and Connolly and himself. So there's no reason to push Burakovsky up to the second line or even to the top line for that matter. I'm a little concerned with what I'm seeing from Alex Chiasson. I'm sure I'm not the only one that's going to say that. But right now, yeah. Jacob Vrana, to me, is a top-six guy. That's what he was projected as. That's what I said 2 years ago when they started flirting with the idea of bringing him up, is if you're going to bring him up, put him in the position he needs to be in to succeed, and that's in the top six.
Alex Chiasson needs to be parked when TJ Oshie's back.
Yes.
And I think what's going to happen is it's going to be very likely Chandler Stephenson or maybe Devontae Smith-Pelly, because for some reason it seems like Barry Trotz loves Alex Chiasson. I have no idea what he provides. I'm not trying to crush the guy, but I'm kind of over it. He can play occasionally, but he doesn't have to get a sweater every single night. How do you think it's going to work when Oshie comes back?
I hope you're right. I hope it is Alex Chiasson that does sit down. I really like Chandler Stephenson. I think he's a very versatile player that can offer a lot, and that's what you're seeing when he plays with Jay Beagle on the fourth line. Is that's not what he's doing when he's down at a lower level, but when he comes up, he's able to jump right in and find a space. Devontae Smith-Pelly, I think, is probably one of the most underrated players on the team right now. I think if he got more ice time and more attention, I think people would compare him very simply to Jason Chimera. I've been saying that a lot, but I really do believe that if he's given the opportunity, he's a big name in this town and he could become a fan favorite. But yeah, I'm not really sure what you're going to see from Alex Chiasson. I get it. This is like the new Brett Connolly. This is the new experiment with Barry Trotz. Let's see if we can restart this top prospect that was a bomb out on the top level. I just think it's not going to strike gold twice.
6:30 post-Meridian tonight after CDVTW. What show is on, Thommy? Tell them.
Crashing the Net. And remember, Danny, if you miss the show, you can subscribe on iTunes.
Oh, hello.
The whole show is there right as soon as the show's over. Crashing the Net on iTunes.
Well, there are lots of hockey-exclusive radio shows, right?
Not in this town, no.
How about it?
Crashing the Net tonight. Thank you, Thommy. Him and Neil Greenberg this evening on The Fan. Grant and Danny next. Redskins ratings are bad on TV this past weekend. How bad? The numbers might just shock you. You're listening to The Fan. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. We're on Twitter. I'm at Grant H. Paulson.
I am at Funny Dan.
Hit us up anytime during or after the show. Keep the conversation going. Danny, you saw a story today in the Washington Post you wanted to chat about.
This is the biggest thing facing the Redskins. This is bigger than anything else, and it's going to influence how they go about it. Every time we've gotten something like this, dramatic stuff has happened. Be it a Scott McLuhan, be it a Donovan McNabb, be it a Mike Shanahan, Joe Gibbs, whatever the hell else. This is the bottom. This is the worst it has ever been. What am I talking about? Local television ratings. We already know about the attendance. We already know about fewer and fewer Redskins fans are going every week to Federal Express Stadium in Raoul John or Landover, whatever the hell else it's called. I'm part of the problem, by the way. I don't go. I have no interest in going. We already know what's going on. Now, and this is Dan Steinmer writing this, this is jarring. So, as a result, the local TV ratings for Washington's loss in L.A. were shockingly low, certainly among the lowest in the Dan Snyder era. Washington's 30-13 defeat earned an 11.8 household rating in D.C. That put it barely ahead of the 11.5 rating earned by the simultaneous Rams-Eagles game. That's not the worst of it. So 0.3.
Hang on. Whoa.
0.3 better than the Rams-Eagles.
First of all, just to give you some context, the Redskins have for so long lived in the 20s.
I'm going to get to that.
Okay. But 11.8, as soon as I hear that with no context to me, alarm bells sound. That is a big deal. Sirens.
That's an oh my God number.
Should be going off. And when you say, now granted, all I wanted to do was watch the Eagles-Rams game this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted the Redskins game to end so badly so I could flip over. I know Dar told me with a handful of minutes left, he flipped over and watch the end. If you are a casual Redskins fan, you're doing that, and I understand that. But for a game in the same time slot to get almost the exact same rating as the Redskins in Washington, D.C., I would have thought in a million years that wouldn't happen.
You beat Rams-Eagles by 0.3 in the same time slot. Wow. Mm. But that isn't the worst of it, Dan writes. Here's the worst of it. During Sunday's 1 p.m. window, the Giants-Cowboys game earned a 14.4 rating in the D.C. market. And later that night, the Steelers-Ravens game on NBC Sunday Night Football earned a 16.2 rating in the D.C. market. Monday Night Football, the Patriots-Dolphins earned an 11.1 rating in the D.C. market. You're now on the level of a national game where nobody has any vested interest in Washington, D.C. So you're still hearing some of these numbers, and you're going, ah, there's a reason for it. There's this, there's that. Go on later on in the piece.
Well, I can explain everything away, but I explain it away still doing that to know that, well, it's a 4 o'clock game. Well, they're bad. Well, you know, the Chargers aren't interesting. It still means that no one watched.
There's been bad before. So, Dan goes on later. As recently as 2013, a bad, bad season. Remember, this is not 2013. That was, oh my God, this is so horrendous. This was the leak-a-lot ship. This was every week a new disaster. This was the end of the Shanahan regime. This was awful, awful, awful stuff.
3-13.
The Redskins averaged, remember the original number, remember the number this week was 11.8. The Redskins averaged a 26.6 rating locally. That's in 2013, one of the worst years in the history of the Redskins. In 2014, Jay Gruden's disappointing first season, they averaged a 22.7 down, but still, fine. The home disaster against the Chiefs in 2013, the 45-10 drubbing in the snow, where the Chiefs got to score in a million different ways and it was one of the worst games ever, earned a 20.7. The depressing December trip to the Giants in 2014, a bad team losing by double digits against another bad team, still earned a 20.3 rating. One more data point. One of the worst Redskins games ever, the 24-0 December shutout against the Rams. Never forget Colt McCoy started that game, by the way. Every time you ask for Colt McCoy, you're wrong. That's who he is. The 24-0 December shutout against the Rams still earned a 16.2, which until now was by far the worst.
Yeah.
The worst it's been. 11.8, less than Nats Cubs. Less than several preseason games in recent Redskins memory.
See, that's the one that kills me. Is
what?
They've done better in the preseason than they did this past weekend. So, a couple things I need. Number one, it's not fair to say last week because they played on a Thursday night, but I want the numbers to their last Sunday game. And I want the numbers this coming Sunday when they come out before I have a big reaction. My speculation, and this doesn't get dismissed because of this, by the way. It's still an unbelievably big deal. But this is a one-off. This is kind of a fluky thing. Holiday season, people are out and about doing what they're doing. 11.5 is the number for that great Rams-Eagles game is also kind of low to me, to be honest with you. Don't you think? Now, I know that you're splitting
right
NFL viewers because most of them are Redskins fans in Washington, D.C., but I would have assumed that both of those games did better. In other words, I would have thought the Redskins were in the mid-teens in the 16-17 range, and that game was in the 15-14 range or something. That tells me that, for whatever reason, at that time of the day, there just weren't as many people sitting at home watching football. The fact that it's December, the fact that the season is lost, the fact that the Chargers aren't particularly interesting.
And it was a blowout.
Yeah, the fact that they got blown out, all reasons why less people watched. Again, not an excuse to say this is not a problem, because it is. But I'd be willing to bet this ends up being the only time this season that they get something this bad. Now, at the end of the year, you could say, well, that's still a possibility now. And I guess that that's true. Maybe this weekend isn't a whole lot different because it's still the holiday season and people are doing their shopping. But I was texting with a couple of people I normally have on my Redskins text chain this week. They weren't watching the game. They were out at a holiday party. They were going and picking up a tree. I'm thinking, this is crazy. These people are normally texting me every time Kirk Cousins throws an incompletion to say, what's wrong with number 8? They weren't even watching the game this weekend. So I think that this is probably a little bit overstated or will get somewhat blown out of proportion because context does matter. However, this is absolutely on a binary little deal, big deal. This is a big deal.
Yeah, my only disagreement with you is that, well, let me rephrase. I don't know if it's a disagreement. I'm emphasizing this. I'm basically saying this data point can be explained in a number of ways. And Dan does a great job. I only read excerpts here, cuts bits and pieces. He does a good job explaining why we're here. We all know that. It's a McLuhan thing, the uncertainty of quarterback, the Bruce.
Yeah.
You can explain a lot of things for a lot of different times. The fact that it's this bad, and even if it's a one-off, is something that is alarm bells are ringing right now in Ashburn. They are running around like the sky is falling, and because basically it is. There have been disastrous seasons, plenty of them, in Dan Snyder's ownership. There were disastrous seasons in the 90s, disastrous seasons in the aughts, embarrassing moments. After the swinging gate, they still were in the 20s, for God's sakes. Jim Zorn, who should not have been anywhere near an NFL sideline, involved in any kind of decision-making other than, if you wanted water or Gatorade. That guy was helping teams get ratings in the 20s. The
right.
Bingo caller. It's been awful.
But in general, I mean, even compared to 3 or 4 years ago, more people are following games online. More people are watching Red Zone. We talk about this all the time.
Sure.
So there are reasons why the numbers are going to go down some. But I do think a lot of it is just we see it. We feel it.
We feel it.
We experience it. There's no reason to not say this. I mean, we mentioned it on the show on Monday. We open our show after the game every single Monday. We have for the 4 football seasons we've been together now as a show. With Game Balls and Gassers. It's our staple. People love it. We have a lot of fun with it. I get tweets all game long with, give that guy a game ball. Give that guy a gasser. I think we had like 1 or 2 calls, and they didn't come in until 3 or so segments into the show. Nobody right off the jump when we were pumping the number called in for the first time all season and for the first time maybe in 2 years of Redskins football. That normally we have full phones for the first hour up until Cousins, and it's not even like someone hangs up and there's another number flashing in right away on our call bank. You can't get in for an hour. We didn't get a call the other day. We see this. We experience it. People do not care as much right now. So that's why the numbers are down. And if you're Bruce Allen and you're Dan Snyder, this is absolutely a thing that you got to start looking at and you got to be worried about. What do you guys make of this? That's the first question. 800-636-1067. Do you kind of just chalk this up to a one-off weird holiday season, December, strange day where people had a lot going on maybe? 800-636-1067, or is this the beginning of a trend where national football over the Redskins could become more and more prevalent in D.C. because the years are just taking their toll on this fan base? Grant and Danny on the Fan. NFL games outrated the Redskins this weekend in Washington, D.C. Uncharted territory. Sound the alarm bells. Close the gates.
It's unbelievable. For anybody that's my age, or even a little bit younger, that remembers when half the televisions in this city and the surrounding areas were on the Redskins. The only reason it was half is because you went to a friend's house. This would never have happened. And it's the fact that it is happening is so unfathomable to folks that grew up and saw the parades and the joy and the excellence. It's amazing that we're here. Alarm bells are going off.
800-636-1067 is the number on the Hadid Carpet Cleaning listener lines. What do you make of the fact that the Ravens game and the Cowboys game did better in D.C. than the Redskins? Two different games, and two others almost topped the Redskins, which had a lower-rated game than some of their preseason games in the last several seasons. John says, as one of your biggest fans, talking about the Grant and Danny show, I hope it's just a fluke. As a diehard Redskins fan, I hope it's the beginning of a trend of philosophical change. I would hope that fans of the show would still call in and contribute either way because the show's great. Thank you, buddy. Yeah,
Thank you.
Not worried about the future of the show, but look, from a sports standpoint, if you care about the Redskins and you care about DC sports, this is a big deal, clearly. Phil, emotional tsunami, combination of very embarrassing loss to a hated rival, talking about the Cowboys game a week earlier, spent the week harassed by their fans, and to boot, get basically washed out of any chance of making the playoffs. Final point, midseason expectations were higher, so gut punched included. Let's not forget, if they were playing a game that was close, if they had a chance to win, if they were leading, the ratings also would have been a lot better.
Would have been better.
But all of these things, even if they're the reasons why it happened, still happened.
Yeah, it's half
and that's
of the
part of it.
It's half of what the Kansas City blowout was a few years ago. Same AFC West opponent, nothing on the line in a 3-13 season at home, washed away. The rating was twice what it was this past
weekend.
What was
the date of that game?
December sometime of 2013.
So it was similarly in the holiday season. Now, that game, I will say, had terrible weather. It was snowing all around the area, so no one was on the roads. You couldn't travel. So if you're at a holiday party to go to, you weren't going and picking out a tree. If you remember, that was a snow game.
It was one of the worst weather games
the Redskins have played in years.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when you have bad weather? You sit in your living room. What happens when you sit in your living room? You watch the Redskins. So that's a little bit misleading, but still a factor. Let's go to Steve in Bethesda. What's up, Steve?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
What's up?
Lots of thoughts on this. First of all, you mentioned the lack of calls on your gasses and game balls. Doesn't seem like you got a lot of calls on your Survivor yesterday either, as far as votes go. I believe this isn't just a one-off. I'm concerned this is an accumulation of 15 years or so of just the worst leadership. And you know, screw what they think about out at Redskin Park. What does the NFL think about what Dan Snyder has done to this franchise? I wish they could take it away from them. I know they can't, but that's got to be a concern with the league to run this great franchise into the ground like he has.
Well, the value, it's still there. I mean, whoever does that, I don't know what formula they use, by the way, because if local interest is a part of it, then bring that $4 billion number down, please.
They've gone from about $1.5 billion in worth when Allen took over to over $3
billion. Yeah, so if I don't know. Again, I don't know what math goes into that. I know this. Fewer people go to your games, and now fewer people watch it on television. That probably would affect value to me, but what am I? Man.
Let's go to Brian in Indian Head on Grant and Danny. What do you make of the fact the Redskins got beat by two other games in Washington, D.C. NFL TV ratings?
I think we're looking at a culmination of things, guys. I think we're looking at, you know, we've got an NFL that's been in disarray all year long with the protests, with the kneeling. We just re-signed Roger Goodell to a $40 million a year contract. I think people are up in arms about that. Man, I love the Redskins. I watched the Cowboys game, man, and it made me sick to my stomach. I sat there and watched the game this week, and the product on the field was just horrific. The guys couldn't put together a drive. They couldn't score points. And while I was one of those people in the ratings that was watching, man, I'm checking my phone. I'm looking on Facebook. I'm having conversations on Twitter, talking with friends. It's hard to watch, man. It really is. And I'm just hoping we turn things around.
Thanks, Brian, buddy.
I agree with you completely. And there wasn't much reason for the casual Redskins observer this weekend to continue to watch the game, to continue to be invested. Now, if you're a diehard, like it sounds like Brian is, like you are, Danny, like I am, yeah, you're going to watch. But I think the majority of people probably just turned off their TV. George and Laurel, what's up?
Hey, George.
Brian, great show.
Thank you, bud.
Guys, I'd be interested to know what is the market share on other teams, say the Cowboys or the Eagles. Are they like in the 20s or 30%?
Well, I mean, this is so hard to quantify, but when the Eagles were playing at the same time, they got an 11-5 and the Redskins got an 11-8. When Dallas plays, their numbers are always big. It's always second to the Redskins game.
Right.
So if Dallas played at the same time as Washington in a different window, more people watch the Redskins game. That's not exactly what happened here, but I mean, the fact that
Cowboys
this
game was at 1, remember, against the Giants.
Right.
Redskins game was at 4, which generally does worse ratings than a 1 o'clock game does anyway.
So Cowboys-Giants got a 14-4 at 1 o'clock, not up against the Redskins. So it would have been interesting if they were both
One. And the Redskins, just so the guy knows, typically gets in somewhere in the low to mid-20s.
Yeah, and it's been steadily going down. It used to be high, you know, high 30s, then low 30s, then high 20s, then mid-20s, and low 20s. I mean, we're still talking about a huge percentage. We're now talking about what a pretty meaningful baseball game gets. You're now talking about, hey, Nats, Mets, primetime in town for the division in September.
I was going to say, a regular season baseball wouldn't touch these numbers, would it?
No.
You're talking about playoff baseball.
Yeah, you would say, I mean, the game 5 for the Nats Cubs was way more than this. This is now Capitals territory, and I'm not trying to disrespect the Capitals. Simply
for the
saying,
playoffs.
This should, and this is the NFL. This should never happen.
It's crazy. You are going to lose more sleep over this than me because I think weird things happen, and I think that this is just an extreme case of, hey, worst-case scenario with where you're at as an organization, this is a possibility now, but this is a once-in-a-year kind of deal, whereas it sounds like you're going to like internalize this more, but it's definitely a problem, and they are definitely going to have a meeting about it. It's going to come up at 21300 Redskins Park Drive in Ashburn today. Mo and Largo, what's up?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, Mo.
I definitely think this is the beginning of a trend. I don't foresee us getting any better amongst the rest of this season. Kirk's going to leave. A bunch of other guys are going to leave. And then we're going to be trash next year. And people are just going to watch for the first 3 weeks and then bail out. And you'll be red zoning it for the rest of the season. But I don't think this is just a one-outer. Like, I think this is the beginning of something that's going to take place for a while until this team gets better. Because there's too many avenues to view football, or too many other games to watch than to just have to sit there and watch the skin, especially when they stink. And if you got fantasy football, you know what I'm saying? I mean, like, why even invest your emotion and your effort into a product that doesn't even care that much about you to show up on the field? I mean,
thank you, Mo.
Thanks,
Appreciate Mo. The call. I didn't mean to cut you off, buddy. I thought you were done there. My bad. We got Kent Babb coming up in a moment. Real quick, put a bow on what Mo was talking about, though, because I agree with his point. Got me thinking. The Cousins contract could end up, in some way, being something decided over this. You know, maybe they're sitting around going, yeah, we don't want to pay him $34 million, but if we go 5-11, then what?
Now what
or
happens?
If they're sitting there and they say, well, let's let Cousins walk because we kind of know what we are right now and what Kirk is. Nobody knows what these rookie quarterbacks, who probably aren't going to be very good, are. But we could sell Baker Mayfield, and people are going to be pretty excited to watch him. And maybe they just decide, if we go in a different direction and you draft someone in the first round, at least that sells in the media. People are going to be pumped. Let's talk to Kent Babb next. He wrote an incredible story on Larry Johnson, former Redskins running back, longtime Chiefs great, who is dealing, he thinks, with CTE problems as he lives his life. You'll want to hear about this next on The Fan. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. We both read a story yesterday, and when I read it, I had to reach out to Kent Babb and talk to him about it.
It's so good.
It's amazing. It's great journalism, but it's also gut-wrenching and it's heartbreaking. And, I mean, if you know Larry Johnson, it's probably tear-inducing. Kent Babb of the Washington Post joins us now. Kent tweeted last night, Larry Johnson, the former NFL running back, believes he's living with CTE. The story explains his paranoia, anxiety, the occasional urge to throw himself off a building. When the demons push him to the edge, there's only one voice that can bring him back. And as you find out reading the story, it's his very young daughter who, for lack of a better phrase, kind of keeps him sane. Kent, take me back to the beginning. I mean, you covered the Chiefs, obviously, at one point in time in Kansas City. Did you have a relationship with Larry? How did you figure out what was going on with him and that you were going to do this story?
Not really a relationship. I mean, we knew of each other, and, you know, he was always sort of a guy who was complicated and moody, and, you know, I think we just sort of wrote it off as that. I mean, like, all locker rooms have that, have that person sometime, and, you know, he got cut my either second or third year on the beat, and that was sort of that. But we knew of each other, and, you know, he remembered me, and the day that the Aaron Hernandez CTE news came out, the day that that Boston University reported the results, that yes, he had a particularly severe case of CTE, LJ tweeted that he was just certain that he had it. If Aaron Hernandez had it, he just knew that he had it. So, you know, I just wanted to know more. And so that started me on a couple of weeks of trying to reach him. You know, some avenues dried up. You know, eventually I went through the nonprofit he works at, and he was just, you know, even over the phone, was just like amazingly candid about something that I think is very difficult to talk about. I mean, saying that sometimes he blows up even at his own daughter, and, you know, he says some things and, you know, forgets that he says them and forgets the repercussions, things like that. And, you know, I asked if he was just interested in me coming down and spending some time with him and seeing what his life looks like. And he said, yeah, nothing is off limits. I'll tell you everything. And, you know, kind of away we went. That was a little more than a month ago. And, you know, I spent quite a bit of time with him, had numerous phone calls with him. And it's hard. I mean, it is a very, very depressing thing. I mean, he's living in sort of a post-football hell. And his money is largely gone. He has struggled to find his identity. He has sort of these feelings and compulsions that I don't know if it's CTE, but I do know that it's incredibly scary.
So to that end, I think cynics might see a headline or they might see part of this, Kent, and say, you know, he's just trying to excuse some of his past behavior because some of that past behavior is very poor. I mean, some incidents with women, a great number of them, some arrests, some things that you wouldn't want associated with yourself. But I found that not to be the case based on your writing and some of these discussions, meaning this is not an excuse. This is simply what happened and kind of where we were. Go into that dichotomy for me, would you?
Yeah, so, you know, he and I, and it's funny you use the word you know, cynics, because I mean, I told him sitting at a coffee shop that first day within probably an hour of us meeting that I had to sort of take a very cynical eye toward what he was telling me. I knew his history for better or worse. And, you know, I don't think he was a particularly well-liked player in Kansas City for exactly what you're talking about. He was extremely volatile. I mean, he was sort of the guy that if a player got arrested, it was probably going to be LJ. I mean, he just, like, he liked to drink and he liked to hit the nightclubs and he had a very bad history with physically assaulting women. And, you know, that in a lot of ways is just straight up inexcusable. And, you know, so I told him all those things and he was, again, just sort of very candid about it and said, look, you know, I've made some terrible mistakes that he can't take back. And there is a little bit of a chicken and egg thing about this. You know, has he made some horrible mistakes because he has CTE, or has he found kind of a great way to excuse himself even in his own mind? And I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I think it's entirely believable that given the position he played, the fact that he ran the ball something like 800 times in two seasons from 05 to 06. I mean, he took a lot of hits to the head. I mean, like, he has this kind of extremely volatile personality that he can just switch on and off just at a moment's notice. And I've seen it. I personally have seen it in the reporting of the story. He can go from happy to extremely upset just at the switch of a button. And it's jarring. I mean, I've never been around somebody like that before that you don't know what to say or if you should say anything. And so again, I don't think that he was doing this as a way. I personally don't believe he was doing it as a way to make an excuse for himself. In the numerous conversations I had with him, if he is, fair enough, I guess. And then, you know, I guess time will tell on that. But I do think that what he's telling me is credible, and it's made more credible by the fact that he at least owns and is very honest about some of the horrible things he did in the past.
Kent Babb's story on Larry Johnson's in the Washington Post at Kent Babb on Twitter. He's got a link to it. You should absolutely read it. It really is incredible. A couple of the stories you told about your time just around him when you talk about him lashing out. You know, he's playing video games with his daughter, and at one point there's enough bright lights and kind of quick movement on the screen. He's got to walk outside to basically keep from lashing out, and then he comes back in and says, hey, we're doing homework now. And then they're going over homework, and she's a child, and he gets really mad at her for not knowing an answer, and he forgets how old she is for a moment and things like that. You know, for me, the stories that really cut to the core of me, Kent, I didn't realize a couple years after being an NFL superstar, this guy's like selling stuff on South Beach as a peddler of like just walker buys. I mean, he was having a hard time getting jobs. He's contemplating jumping off buildings at different points. He's putting together videos because he's not sure if he's going to be around when his daughter's old enough to understand that he played football. Like, what, when you were doing your reporting, was the saddest thing for you where you're like, oh my gosh, how am I going to tell this story?
Right.
And how do you not get like emotionally invested when you do something like this?
I didn't. I mean, like, it's this, I mean, this is not about me, but I mean, it took a toll. I mean, like, this, the rawness and the emotional aspect of this is very difficult. And it's not something that I have a whole lot of experience with. And just, again, I mean, you asked me what was the hardest part. I think just the sheer bleakness of it. And, you know, the first night I was there with them, you know, I texted a friend in Kansas City who's familiar with LJ's career, and I was just like, you know, I don't know what to do here. Like, I think, and not talking about tonight, but just in the future, you know, I fear that he's going to do something reckless or harmful, and, you know, whether that's to himself or somebody else. And I guess let me be clear. I mean, I do think he's in, it may not seem like it from reading this story, but I think he's in a decent place now. I mean, he has his identity. He works with a nonprofit, you know, that uses the arts to kind of motivate young people who come from a very difficult background. He has partial custody of his daughter. He has some things that kind of get him moving and distract him. It's when he's by himself that his mind kind of wanders. And that's when I personally worried about him and probably will continue to worry about him going forward, because it's just the way that I think most people live, you have some kind of guarantee that tomorrow it'll be okay. And I don't think he has that. Like, I think, and I don't think he's alone either. I think a lot of these NFL players who have been taught from an early age, you got to man up and be tough and get back in there and shake it off and rub some dirt in it. They're told not to complain and to basically shut up. And I think LJ is, at least in my experience, the first person to stand up and say he's thinking these things. And I bet you there are a lot more current and former NFL players who have some of these similar symptoms that they may not say it, but I think they suspect some of these same things. And again, nobody can prove it.
Right.
And well, so maybe I'm wrong, but well, I suspect there's a lot of guys like that.
You mentioned in the story as well, he was diagnosed bipolar, that he has other issues, you know, that may not have anything to do with CTE. But as someone who deals with, I'm on anxiety medication. I mentioned it on the air before. You know, that he talks about anxiety, talks about depression, some of those things. But he also says in the story he stopped taking medication. I wonder why that is. Like, to me, he seems like a guy that could really benefit from medication for whether it's bipolar, whatever he's dealing with.
He doesn't trust himself to not drink. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And I'm not a pharmacist, and you know, I think a lot of these medications interact poorly with alcohol, and LJ does drink. I mean, like, he hasn't entirely quit drinking. And I mean, he has cut down considerably and mostly sticks to beer and wine because he doesn't trust himself drinking hard liquor. I think part of that is just aging and being kind of in his late 30s. You can't, you know, handle it quite the same way you used to be able to. But, you know, he doesn't trust that if he's on some kind of anti-anxiety or, you know, whatever kind of medication, that he won't be on it and go drinking. And I think just he lives minute to minute in a lot of ways and doesn't want to be on whatever his regular medication is and say, yeah, I'll come have a drink with you, and then all hell breaks loose. So I get it in that way. You know, he knows himself better than I possibly can know him or anybody can. It is unconventional, and I think in general, if you're prescribed something, you should probably take it. But in this case, I think this is just sort of him against the world, which has sort of been his mantra throughout most of his life.
At Ken Babb on Twitter. Again, the story's terrific. It's in the Washington Post. I've tweeted it out a moment ago at Funny Danny. My last one for you, Kent, is this. I've got one of my best buddies played college football, and anytime there's a CTE-related story or something he thinks is, whether you want to call it a war on football or whatever else, snarky journalist, et cetera, he always has this cynical view and kind of approach. And he would point out that Larry Johnson had stuff before, kind of what we're talking about. Forget about bipolar, but this kind of mentality in high school where he was going after, you know, trying to do things on the field to show how tough he was to impress his dad and that kind of psychology. What would you say to that stuff, that he kind of walked in with some baggage, if that makes sense?
Well, he absolutely did. So I agree with that. I mean, just going back to Penn State, Larry Johnson was a great big pain in the butt. I mean, like, there's just no denying that whatsoever. And I guess I would just say, again, it goes back to the chicken and egg thing. I mean, he told me several stories of being 8, 9 years old, of feeling like he was probably concussed. Just certain things happen. He gets up, he's dizzy. He has just rip-roaring headaches. He can't remember where he is. And this goes back to when he's 9. I mean, 9, 10, 11, when your brain is still developing. So, I mean, I think from his standpoint, he would say, and I asked him about this directly, he said that by the time he got to Penn State, he felt the damage was done. And basically whatever, you know, trauma his head would have taken as a 9, 10, 11-year-old did something to his brain, messed him up, and kind of put him on this path that by the time he got to State College and certainly the NFL, that his wires were crossed and he didn't necessarily know right from wrong and his decision making was bad. And, you know, is there some free will in this? 100% that he was a grown man and probably should have known better than to put himself in certain situations. But at least to me, and I don't expect everybody to agree with this, I do find it believable that if a 9-year-old gets beat in the head on a football field and gets up dizzy, that could have some long-term ramifications, at least knowing what we know now. So I find that credible. It's not going to satisfy everybody, and I get that, but at least in that case, I think, at least in my opinion, I think it's believable.
Kent, the story's awesome, and it's a job well done.
It's terrific, man.
It's going to open a lot of eyes all around the country. Thanks so much. We appreciate you jumping on the show.
Guys, absolutely. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Kent Babb of the Washington Post on Grant and Danny. Let's get to the big one at one next.
Folks, Danny Ruye for my pals at Ted Britt Ford now, right now. This minute, this is what I'm talking to you about. Ted Britt Ford, it's the time to go. The number one truck in America is the Ford F-150. You can get a 2018 Ford F-150. You can lease it for just $249 a month or get up to $11,000 off the MSRP. That's a Ted Britt Ford. 2017 Ford Focus, as low as $11,999. You know what that is? You do. It's a Ted Britt Ford. Also, 2018 now, mind you, Ford Escape, you can lease one for just $199 a month. Your bottom line, several deals like this. I got plenty more. I could bore you with all those numbers, but I can tell you this. You're going to get an outstanding deal at Ted Britt Ford. You're going to get treated incredibly well. They do a little thing I like to call Ted Britt for Life. They call that, too. The reason I call it that is because that's what they call it. That's the name of it. Here's what it means. Lifetime vehicle coverage. New pre-owned vehicles. Anything less than 100,000 miles, you get taken care of like you are a big. You roll in, you get your powertrain coverage, right? That's the big stuff. That's your transmission, transfer case, engine, drive axle, all the big fancy stuff. Little things. They take care of the little things. Crack your windshield. They'll fix it for you. No more driving around getting 1,000 estimates. They handle it for you because they respect you and your time. Go see my pals at Pepper Ford. Tell them Danny sent you.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.